G-65, ICA Headquarters, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Alessandro Bonucci found himself growing slightly impatient as the minutes ticked on and still William Godfrey and his inner circle were yet to arrive. He felt sure that Godfrey would begin his speech at the scheduled time. The chairman was a stickler for punctuality, particularly when an audience of billions was expected to be tuning in, but the 15 minutes he'd been sitting quietly in his seat felt more like 50. Glancing around at the attendant media teams, Alessandro's eyes couldn't help but fall and pause on the two individuals from the controversial Blitz News. After the bugging incident at his parents' house, Alessandro had learned from Timo that there were apparently some powerful and competing interests at play, which very few people understood. Timo had a team of his own trying to get to the bottom of everything, he said, and they weren't the sort of people who were above doing whatever it took to find what had to be found. Timo's extensive and sometimes shadowy network of contacts had come up trumps in this regard before. Money had a way of getting results, to no one's surprise, delivering information on the risible and now incarcerated Jack Neal's economic links to both John Cole and the now eliminated anti-contact group of terrorists who had called themselves the Geosovs. In the present, Timo and his investigators were tracking the actions of individuals closely linked to the hedge fund which had recently purchased the Blitz Media empire while concealing its indirectly held interests in suspiciously arranged corporations with focuses on everything from private security and armaments to pharmaceutical and biomedical research. The fund, legally known as Emporion Holdings, had a structure more convoluted than any Timo had ever encountered. Its purchase of Blitz was what really caught his eye, though, since on the face of it, this was the only major factor that distinguished Emporion from any other number of funds with interests in similar areas. That no other mainstream media organizations had reported on the buyout with anything more than a passing interest disappointed Timo, but it didn't surprise him. With so much having been going on over the past few months regarding the future of the ICA and Earth's relationship with New Kerguelen, the corporate affairs of a lowbrow media conglomerate were hardly the most pressing concern in most people's minds. There was also the secondary point that media organizations, quite understandably, were rarely interested in covering the affairs of their rivals, unless those affairs were of a sort so as to be very obviously damaging if made public. A vast corporate restructuring evidently failed to meet the threshold of public interest, and nor did the massive investment Blitz had secured seem to be anything remotely damaging. Indeed, Blitz Media properties, from the cornerstone Blitz News TV station to the previously floundering but unkillable as a cockroach daily chat newspaper, had crowed from the rooftops about the buyout. It would enable them to deliver even better coverage, they said, like their wonderful viewers and readers deserved. The only element of the buyout which had received considerable attention was the resulting promotion of Jan Geller to a czar-like position at the top of the entire Blitz Media pyramid. Having first risen to prominence by way of her relentless and oftentimes overly personal opposition to Dan McCarthy during the early days after he leaked the documents which first alerted the world to the existence of intelligent extraterrestrials, Geller's role in those days had been as editor of the formerly failing Daily Chat. By imitating the stubbornly successful British tabloids in a way none of their overly sensationalized U.S. counterparts had ever quite achieved, Geller had used a very carefully balanced mix of celebrity gossip, populist political analysis, and free giveaways to turn the chat's fortunes around more successfully than even she could have predicted or hoped. In the end, however, Jan's opposition to Dan proved her undoing when he won the public's heart and ultimately succeeded in setting off a train of events that forced President Slater and other world leaders to announce to the world that aliens did exist. By the time the Daily Chat's front page proclaimed, "We are not alone," in celebration along with every other major periodical, Jan had already been pushed aside by her former bosses. Dan and his leak had ruined her career, as everyone recognized in no uncertain terms. For Jan, however, the real beef was with the brains behind the whole operation. Emma. Emma was the McCarthy against whom Jan bore what was comfortably her deepest grudge of all, and the newly promoted Blitz Media Supremo would stop at nothing to bring her down a peg or two. Precisely because of Jan's colored history with the McCarthys, no one had been surprised by the anti-messenger direction in which Blitz Media had pivoted since the buyout. But while others attributed this to Jan's promotion and considered that she had been put in a position of such power simply so Blitz could harness her flair for the controversial, a flair more necessary than ever in a world where the number of eyeballs on any given piece of media content seemed to mean far more than what the people behind them thought about it, Timo had spoken to his trusted allies about what he thought was really going on. In the billionaire's mind, Geller had been put in place to weaken the position of Dan and the ICA in the realm of public opinion. He thought it was quite possible that Jan herself didn't even understand how she was being used, but the recent explosion of Blitz-delivered stories about the dangers posed by the messengers and their uplift powers in particular had found a disturbingly wide audience. To an extent, Timo understood the fears people had about telepathy and telekinesis. After all, these were truly incredible abilities, which only a few years earlier would have been dismissed out of hand as being even theoretically possible. What Timo understood less easily was why so many people bought Blitz's fearmongering about the messengers themselves. For him, and fortunately an overall majority of those who were concerned about the powers at all, the real danger was of the uplift powers being bastardized by nefarious human individuals or groups. Potential military applications of telekinesis were naturally a focus of governments around the world, and some of the messengers' remarkable displays of strength, especially Leisha's regrettable destruction of a human aggressor less than a month earlier, were sufficiently frightening and impressive to ensure that this particular genie could never be put back into its bottle. Telepathy, rather than telekinesis, had been the focus of most of Jan Geller's Blitz Media scare stories, however, with speculative fears projected into living rooms around the country regarding devices capable of being placed inside streetlights and in all kinds of other public locations to record the deepest thoughts of every passing citizen. Geller used examples like this to oppose social and technological cooperation of any kind between humans and the messengers, claiming that governments would inevitably use the powers to develop these kinds of dystopian technologies as soon as the chance presented itself. Geller had also recently fronted a Blitz News special report about the benefits of so-called home-proofing equipment, which supposedly protected the inhabitants of a household against telepathic intrusion by way of special roofing tiles and weak radio transmitters, and the cost of which often ran into thousands of dollars per home. This special news report was funded by one of the largest firms at the center of the recent home-proofing boom, and this apparent conflict of interest had led many observers to speculate that Blitz Media's endless anti-messenger propaganda was commercially motivated beyond a general desire to generate ratings with controversial content. The theory held that by whipping up hysteria about the uplift powers, Blitz was selling more home-proofing installations for one of its heaviest TV advertisers. It wasn't a theory that was totally devoid of logic, but Timo understood only too well that the kind of money brought in from advertising revenue or sales commission for home-proofing services was barely a drop in the ocean to the shady and unseen figures behind the wheel of the bad ship Emporion. Timo had spoken about this with Emma, and both believed that the home-proofing report may have been designed precisely for this purpose of diverting attention from the real intention, that of creating a perceived need to defend against a non-existent threat they were trying to establish as legitimate, towards one of simpler and shorter-term revenue generation. Of late, one thing typically absent from hysterical coverage on Blitz News and the digital and printed pages of the corporation's other properties had been any overly direct criticism of Dan McCarthy. In a post-contact and post-visitation era, in which Dan was more or less beyond reproach in the eyes of the general public, much to Jan Geller's chagrin, the Blitz Supremo was careful to avoid basing her public concerns on a personal distrust of him. Instead, Geller tended to insist that Dan was being used by the likes of Godfrey, Ding, and Slater as a lightning rod to keep attention from themselves while simultaneously legitimizing Earth's contact-focused international agency among the populations of both Earth and New Kerguelen. Everything Geller said of late always came back to the Uplift powers, however, and for this reason, it was Emporion's interests in speculative pharmaceutical and biomedical research which concerned Timo even more than its investments in pseudo-militarized private security firms around the world. The notion of ill-defined biomedical research caused Timo so much unease, primarily because what many considered rumors about a recent explosion in attempts to weaponize the kinds of telepathy and telekinesis harnessed by the messengers were known to him to be stone-cold fact. Ever since Leisha and Sacco first displayed their powers and in doing so took them from the realm of the fantastical into that of the evidently practical, something of an arms race had been underway to somehow replicate the abilities. Reverse engineering was the shortcut to doing so, if any was available, and Timo went to bed every night hoping and praying that no one who sought to weaponize or even commercialize the remarkable Uplift powers had ever, or would ever, gain access to any of the alien technology which could enable such a thing to come to pass. Timo's own great hope was that he and his trusted Fiori Frontieri staff would soon have unrestricted access to the messenger's spacecraft so that their propulsion systems could be understood. But out of curiosity, as much as anything else, he also longed for a fuller understanding of things like telepathy, telekinesis, and teleportation. Piper McCarthy's situation and the powers that had been briefly granted to Terra while Dan and Billy were on New Kerguelen had given Timo a far greater insight into the powers within the last month than he had ever had beforehand. But rather than quench his thirst for knowledge, this had merely whetted his appetite. Small devices like the square patches which granted telepathy within certain bounds and the triangular equivalents which enabled humans to read alien transcripts were remarkable in themselves, but considering the ever-expanding horizon of what now seemed possible, filled Timo with constant wonder. He had engaged in some early research very recently, telepathically communicating with Clark McCarthy while both were hooked up to equipment which recorded their neurological activity. Some patterns in the data stuck out as particularly interesting to Timo, but he was no expert in neurology and was currently seeking someone who was such an expert, and also merited the degree of trust he would need to have in them before seeking their opinion on the results of his highly secretive tests. What troubled Timo more immediately than any concern about the wrong people getting their hands on any alien technology was the far realer threat of them accessing data related to the Uplift powers. As Timo knew only too well, Dan had been taken to a secretive federal facility immediately after his public interaction with the messengers, way back on contact day, and had then been taken for regular scans in the months afterwards. What Timo feared now was that the data gathered by the medical staff at that facility, and later the high-security hospitals where Dan was tested, may have made its way into some grubby and questionably motivated hands. Timo himself had tried very hard to access this data, with Dan's implicit knowledge and permission, and he took some degree of comfort that he had been unable to get his hands on it. Indeed, when his investigators furtively reached out to some individuals known to have worked within the facilities in question, the reactions were firmly negative. People who worked at that level did tend to understand the consequences of leaking sensitive data, he constantly tried to reassure himself, and the people higher up were always careful to make sure no more workers than necessary ever saw or accessed any given information.
"Here comes Cole," Natalia Ritchie whispered from Alessandro's side, nudging him in the arm to capture his attention physically as well as vocally. With just a few minutes remaining until the scheduled start time of Godfrey's speech, a mild degree of commotion greeted the arrival of his former protege. All media analysis suggested that the upcoming speech would command a global audience rarely seen for any live event that didn't directly involve the presence of Dan McCarthy or one of the aliens who so consistently chose to visit him rather than the man who would be speaking before the media's cameras today, and it seemed obvious to everyone that John Cole was trying to arrive as late as possible so as to steal some of the spotlight. When he eventually made his way into the room, fashionably and deliberately later than the rest of the attendees who weren't participating in the ceremony, He made an unmissable point of taking the scenic route to his waiting chair so that he could engage in some friendly conversation with the Blitz News reporter in attendance. He shook hands with the woman and her cameraman, clearly making a show of the interaction in the knowledge that most of his fellow attendees had sought to ban all Blitz Media properties from the event, given the corporation's recent opposition to almost everything the ICA hoped to achieve. This was a bold and divisive play, even for Cole, and Alessandro Bonucci could only scratch his head in confusion as he watched it all unfold. Alessandro didn't know whether Cole possibly also knew that others were starting to suspect more was going on with Blitz than met the eye, and he tried to be careful not to give too much credit to the Prime Minister's strategizing. He was an effective modern politician, as no one could deny. But there was a big difference between the kind of scheming Cole conducted and the kind of seed-planting brilliance exhibited by a certain Richard Walker, for instance, during the years and even decades he had spent building the foundation for the IDA hoax, which went on to set in motion far more than the grizzled old maverick had ever imagined. Cole was the idiot who announced Il Diavolo's approach to the world's media by accidentally holding a classified printed note the wrong way round just yards from his Downing Street home, Alessandro remembered. He was hardly going to be in on anything with Blitz and Emporion. But I guess they could be using him without him really understanding what it's all about. There was a lot to consider when it came to John Cole and his usually shady motives, and Alessandro's mind was full of so many ideas that he hardly knew where to start. Natalia, sitting by his side, had firmly instructed him to stay out of Cole's path as much as possible, and certainly to avoid being drawn into any conversations with him while the media's cameras were around. But as a hubbub behind Alessandro indicated the belated arrival of the soon-to-be officially inaugurated ICA chairman William Godfrey, little did either of them, nor indeed Timo Fiori, know that the motives and ruthlessness of Blitz's mysterious backers would soon present themselves in a truly devastating way that no one could imagine.